Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
この番組はジャパントップ10ナンバーワンの J-POP ポッドキャストです。このエピソードはスペシャルエピソードです。You're listening to Japan Top 10, the number one Japanese music podcast. You're listening to a special episode on
Japan Top 10.
Hello everyone, this is Andy.
And I'm Brinton.
And you, of course, are listening to Japan Top 10, and we have a very special episode for you this February. We are going to be covering The Legend of Zelda music. So I hope all of our gamer fans out there will be excited to geek out a little bit with us over this. But first, before we get too deep into our deep dive, we will have some announcements for our listeners. Now, if you want to advertise on our podcast and market your brand onto one of the world's most popular Japanese cultural-based podcasts out there, reaching up to potentially 70,000 listeners around the world on a weekly basis, with advertising costs that will fit your company's budget, then you should definitely check us out. You can find the full details at jtop10.jp, and we will work with you to find an advertising plan that will suit your company's budget.
Yes, we're currently looking for a new audio editor and on-air host to volunteer and join our podcast. If you're interested, please have a look on the website at jtop10.jp/join for full details on how to apply. If you love Japanese music culture, then this really will be a great opportunity for you.
Additionally, if you are a producer of Japanese music culture, say an indie Japanese music artist, and you would like some exposure, then we would definitely recommend that you get in touch with our music director by sending them an email at nola@jtop10.jp. That's nola@jtop10.jp. And just include the song that you would like us to feature on the podcast, as long as a little blurb about yourself, and we will definitely love to feature you and discover, along with our listeners, your unique sound.
Yes, and speaking of listeners, if you are enjoying this episode, remember that you can receive up to triple the number of songs by becoming a Patreon donor, starting at just $1. Plus, you'll receive this episode without any announcements or interruptions, just commentary and music. Check out our website at jtop10.jp/club for details.
All right. Well, I mean, before diving into the illustrious musical history of this very, very storied franchise, I guess I'll start as I often like to start on these kind of episodes. What is your personal history with the Legend of Zelda franchise?
It goes a very long way. Yeah, I'd probably say it started with The Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time, and I've been basically a lifelong Zelda fan since. Like, I kind of fell off at Twilight Princess, not because I didn't like it or anything. I think I just grew out of, like, Nintendo games for a bit there. But I came back in full swing with the Switch, you know, playing Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And, of course, Echoes of Wisdom. All of them, you know, great games. And, of course, they're all great games in their own right.
Definitely. Oh, that is exciting. Yeah, I would kind of echo a similar narrative arc that I had throughout my life. Yeah, definitely came in at the Nintendo 64 classic Ocarina of Time, and then have just kind of followed the series. Whether I've been playing it or watched other people play it, I've always been around it and enjoyed it. So yeah, I'm excited to definitely dig into some of the music, because I feel, although I maybe moved away from the games for a bit in my, you know, early adulthood, I kept putting Zelda tracks on mixtapes for people I would make, just because I was like, oh, they're gonna love the surprise. It's like a little Easter egg. So definitely a fan of the music as well over here.
Yeah, and with these games as well, it's like, I've actually found that it's really difficult to describe what makes a Zelda game. Have you found that?
Yeah, yes, actually. It's a puzzle wrapped in a adventure, wrapped in a fairy tale with action, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, my version would be, it's a game about cutting grass and breaking pots.
I think that's more succinct and honestly speaks more deeply to what most people spend a lot of their time doing, myself included. All right. Well, I mean, I'm sure like us, many of our listeners might be acquainted with Zelda quite personally, but we like to start off these episodes by giving a little history lesson for those who might be interested, and just to kind of give ourselves a refresher on where we've come from and where we're going to head. So without further ado, I'll start by just laying out the basis that on July 15th, 1983, Japan was introduced to the Family Computer System, or Famicom. And this was the system that allowed people to play arcade games at home.
On the 18th of October, 1985, the system was released to be sold by a few select retailers in the United States under the name of the Nintendo Entertainment System. The video game industry had seen a crash in America, and of course, for many gamers out there, you might know it as an influx of shovelware games that culminated in the release of the infamous E.T. game. As a result of that, retailers were hesitant to buy into the Nintendo Entertainment System in the face of, you know, that event. And so the name change was part of Nintendo's attempt to sell it as something more like a toy than a video game system.
And amazingly, that worked. The original launch was an incredible success, a successful rebrand. And as of February of 1986, they had expanded to more retailers across America and Canada before partnering with other countries to release the system to the rest of the world, bringing us mass culture.
Yes, and that's not all. The Legend of Zelda was released on the 21st of February, 1986 for the Famicom Disk System, which was an attachment for the original Famicom that allowed you to play games on floppy disks or floppy disk-like storage devices called disk cards, and allowed players to save their game progress.
The game sold 1.69 million copies for the disk system in Japan and had sold 3 million copies in America by 1990 after its release in 1987. Before landing on the 6.5 million copies sold total that we have today.
And since then, The Legend of Zelda has become a series that has continued to see commercial success. The series now spans 21 mainline games, 17 spin-offs, and 9 remakes and re-releases, along with countless books, comics, and yes, even a TV show. That show was infamous for giving Link a voice and, of course, giving fans a reason why Link never speaks.
I mean, you didn't love the line delivery of the television show?
Excuse me, princess.
Ooh, that was good. Now, it might surprise you that the mainline series of the Legend of Zelda franchise also has a timeline, which I'm sure you can go down a YouTube rabbit hole or a Reddit rabbit hole or any sort of corner of the internet where people gather and talk about these types of things and find conflicting opinions. But this was not even a conceived idea until it was in the publication of the Hyrule Historia, which is a book in a series covering everything Zelda, such as art, story beats, and even including a full-blown encyclopedia, which the sheer amount of characters, monsters, items, lore, and everything, I think, has warranted such a book to be produced. But it was in that Hyrule Historia that the timeline was finally revealed in full.
Yes, and if you know you can't get your hands on the book, don't worry. You can also find the timeline on the official website.
Oh, that is lovely. A good reference for any person getting into a debate about what game goes where and why. But to date, the latest entry in the mainline series is Echoes of Wisdom, which takes the series in an interesting new direction by daring to ask the question, what if Zelda was a girl? Interestingly enough, this would not be Zelda's actual first outing as a playable character, however.
Yeah, it's always a funny question when people think Zelda is the main character, when, you know,
It's Link.
Yeah, it's Link.
Yeah, I feel for years and years and years, the title of the franchise has maligned many gamers. I shouldn't even say gamers, people on the periphery of gaming, perhaps, to not quite get that that's not the main character's name.
Well, in Echoes of Wisdom, it is the main character's name.
True. That is true.
Yeah, probably the worst thing to happen to the fan base, to add to more confusion. But yes, of course, there are many spin-off titles in the franchise as well. We did say 17, and that's a pretty long list to name games out, so we're just going to name a few examples, such as Link's Crossbow Training, which was released for the Nintendo Wii, freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land, which was released on the Nintendo DS, Cadence of Hyrule, which was released on the Nintendo Switch, and of course, Hyrule Warriors, which was released on Wii U, Nintendo 3DS, and Switch. And this game celebrated the franchise as a whole, whilst also introducing, I guess, quirky interpretations of characters such as Marin from Link's Awakening, Ravio from A Link Between Worlds, if you ever wanted to see how he would, you know, work in a combat setting, there you go. Agatha, you might know this character from Twilight Princess as like the bug-collecting freak. And, of course, Hyrule Warriors introduced a character that was exclusive to the game, Linkle. This character basically answers the question, what if Link was a girl?
A full circle to bring more confusion to those playing and debating and musing about it.
Yes, and I think it did ask some very daring questions there as well.
And while we're on spin-offs, how could we forget the infamous CDI games? These games were developed as part of a deal between Nintendo and Philips to create a CD add-on for the SNES. While the CD add-on never made it to store shelves, the world did get to see three Zelda games, including Link, The Faces of Evil, Zelda, The Wand of Gamelon, and Zelda's Adventure. These games were largely considered to be not very good, and even Nintendo doesn't acknowledge these games for good reason. However, Zelda's Adventure was the first time where players got to experience a game where Zelda was the main character. Did they also have voice lines in that one? I forget. I've never played them. Oh my gosh.
They did. Yeah, Link had a voice as well, and I remember this one specific line that's just been burned into my brain, where he was like, I'm so hungry, I could eat an Octorok.
Oh boy. Does that ever come out like in your day-to-day, or is it something that lives exclusively in your mind?
It's basically like anytime someone mentions that they would like to hear, like, especially with Breath of the Wild having voice acting for some characters, you know, there's been discussions about how it would be nice if Link had also had, you know, spoken lines. And there are, you know, of course, many examples that you've just heard, like saying that the, you know, Link should never speak. And that's kind of like the correct way to go about it.
I think I'm going to hypothesize, maybe we just haven't found the, maybe you're destined to be the next voice of Link. Maybe you will bring him out of his depths of voicelessness.
No, I think it's really just adding more fuel to the fire of, like, I don't know, just encouraging the no voice lines camp there.
Touché. I think you're underselling your talents, though. But
I mean, there was a solid attempt at giving Link a voice, other than him yelling and shouting and all that. But yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Sounds like a plan. Well, until that point, we will get through a little bit of the rest of our history here, including some notable characters that, you know, dot the franchise and various iterations of the game. It has been going for almost 40 years at this point. No need to acknowledge how old that makes me feel. But there's obviously bound to be some mainstays and fan favorites amongst the characters, including, of course, Link, Zelda, Ganondorf, and Sheik, naturally. However, there's also fan unfavorites for many that would include Tingle. I always forget, is it Fi or Fi?
Fi.
Fi? Okay, thank you. Mallow, and I'm sure there's more fan unfavorites to be had there, but we'll leave that to everyone's discretion. But outside of just characters, of course, iconic items such as the Master Sword, Boomerang, Fairy Bottles, Bombs, and mini-games that everyone loved to partake in, as a little aside from the main adventure, including the shooting gallery, doing fishing, racing, or obstacle courses, collecting the gold Skulltulas, Korok seeds, or Pose.
Yeah, that's... gosh, like, it didn't really occur to me until, I guess, you know, just listing all of those things off that, yeah, that is a lot of ground to cover for such a massive franchise.
Definitely. And I'm sure there is someone out there who is maybe listening or not listening, but their ears perked up at the mention of a Zelda-related podcast episode, and they're upset that we did not mention the minute character that they hold near and dear to their heart.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Navi is also a very controversial character, don't you think?
I was going to say Navi. Her name was not coming to me. I was going to say the fairy from Ocarina of Time, and I didn't want to sound like a poser, but it just was not prescient in my mind. So thank you for bringing it up. Yeah, I feel a much maligned character in the cast of The Legend of Zelda.
Really? I feel like she gets way more hate than she deserves. You know who deserves hate? King Zora. You know how he takes his time just moving out of the way?
But he's so endearing. Is he endearing? I don't know. I guess he has no real redeeming qualities.
I mean, I think his only quality is just the quirky sounds that he makes as he's moving aside. It's like ooey or something like that. But you know what? It is nevertheless a franchise that has left a massive cultural mark. I think, yes, we did talk about this in Animal Crossing, you and I, both Andy. And yeah, I think we also touched on Zelda characters making appearances as villagers. But more than just that, they've also made appearances in other games. To get the obvious out of the way, they have made appearances in the Super Smash Bros. Games. But there's also Mario Kart 8, which included Link, as well as a Zelda-inspired course. The Zelda characters, like when you scan them as amiibos, they also appear as playable characters in Super Mario Maker. There's also a Zelda-inspired level in Sonic Lost World, and Link is also a playable character in Soul Calibur 2. That's just to name a few examples of crossovers.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't know the full extent of where Link and Zelda characters have gone across the multiverse. Is there one iteration that you particularly enjoy or has caught you off guard the most?
Yeah, so very early on in the Nintendo Switch's life, they announced that The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim would be releasing. And as part of that release, they also included Zelda exclusive items. So in a way, there is a crossover between Zelda and Skyrim. And that's probably one of the most surprising collaborations I've ever seen.
I would definitely agree. I feel for games that, I mean, not necessarily thematically similar, but yeah, sword wielding fantasy adventures, right? They seem to occupy so vastly different of a mental space for me. Yes, so I think it is safe to say that outside of just video game media, the Zelda characters and their franchise were bound to step into the real world via official merch at some point or another. And of course, being that it's one of Nintendo's most popular franchises, other than Super Mario, they have had their fair share of merchandise produced and continuing to be made, including a lot of items found on the official Nintendo store, such as keyrings, stickers, pins, neckties, and even bath mats.
Yeah, I feel like that list went from 0 to 100 really quickly there. Neckties?
Bath mats. Yes, neckties also too. I'm interested to... I feel like a necktie shaped as the Master Sword could be an interesting addition to someone's wardrobe.
No, but could you imagine, like, being such a massive Zelda fan that literally everything that you own is Zelda themed? Like, I think they sell Zelda t-shirts as well. So it's like, you have to have your Zelda outfit. And of course, for work, you have to put on your Zelda necktie.
I'm pretty sure. I know. Okay. I have not checked, but I would not be surprised if they had like a Zelda waffle maker, a Zelda toaster, etc., etc. I feel like you truly could just have your Zelda themed entire life if you preferred to.
Yeah, I know there's the Nintendo Entertainment cereal or something like that. I don't know if Zelda was ever in that cereal. You never know. There's always an opportunity.
There's always an opportunity to make money.
Yes, and speaking of opportunities and making money, in a collaboration with Lego, there is also a Lego set that features the Great Deku Tree and also Link's House from Ocarina of Time, and includes minifigures of Link, of which there are three versions actually, and Zelda. Yeah, that's it's a very expensive set, if if you're about to ask.
I was about to ask. Do you know from experience or just curiosity?
Okay, so I actually bought a bunch of Lego sets from like back in the COVID-19 days. And those, like the sets really add up quickly. But one of the more expensive sets that I have is the Super Mario 64 question block. And I think that was like $400 Australian.
Holy moly. Wow.
And That's the same thing for the Deku Tree set as well. I think it's $400 Australian as well.
And how to scale? I mean, I know it's Lego, but what is the scale like for these items?
Yeah, I mean, like, the scale is, like, they are full-fledged sets. They are very, like, I don't know how to... There's lots of detail in them, so it's not like, you know, you're being fleeced or anything of that sort.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Oh, that's incredible. And are they, if I may ask, are they displayed at your home?
The question mark block, yes. The Deku Tree set, it's still in the box.
Oh, wow. Okay. That, an investment. That was a... an asset for the future. No, I'm just kidding.
I wish I could say that, but no, it's more like I've got several other Lego sets that are waiting to be built.
Let's see. The backlog.
Yeah.
Well, those aren't the only figures to come out of Nintendo's many collaborations. There are also official figurines outside of just the amiibo figurines produced by Nintendo, including some that Nintendo has teamed up with Good Smile Company, which is a very notable figure making company, to release several of their Figma line of Link, Zelda, and Ganondorf. Those are, by the way, I don't know. I guess I'm too much of a novice. I don't know too much about figures and the quality and stuff, but to my untrained eyes, the Figma series are very beautiful. I feel like they always do a really good job. But outside of just that, they also have their Nendoroid figures of Link, including variations of Link from Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and even Toon Link.
Yep, and I happen to own all of them. Well, not all of them. There's also Breath of the Wild Link, which I don't have, but all of the ones that you just mentioned there.
That's incredible. Are you pleased? I do like the Nendoroid series. I think they have a lot of charm. Are those displayed? Hopefully.
They are displayed, but they're also tucked away from, like, okay, so the thing about Nendoroid figurines, and I think this was a thing, especially with the Kirby figurine when it was released back then, was that they got, like, the plastic wore off in the sun, and my room happens to see a lot of sunlight. So yeah, they're kind of tucked away in a dark corner somewhere.
A forbidden gem, a treasure to be kept out of the sun.
I know this is a Zelda episode, but right now, Kirby figurines are open for pre-orders.
I mean... hey, if people are looking, are you eyeing, I know this is a Zelda episode, but I gotta ask, are you eyeing any of the Kirby figurines?
I've already made pre-orders.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well, you heard it here first. It is a vetted product if you are a Zelda fan. Keep your eyes peeled for any further updates that might happen on the Zelda front.
Yes, but also, I guess back to the episode proper, fans of Tears of the Kingdom might... you know about the Zonai devices and the Zonai device dispenser in the game, which basically works like a gachapon machine. Well, Nintendo has gone and brought that into the real world by also selling magnetic Zonai devices, and they're packaged in, like, actual gachapon machines, which, you know, it's absolutely, like, bonkers. But the sad thing is that you can only get these from the official Nintendo store in Japan. But, you know, I guess it's fair. Going to the Nintendo store is kind of like a whole experience of itself.
Yeah, I think worthwhile from what I hear. I've never been, unfortunately. But yeah, I do think that is... I mean, it is perfect. I think it's very funny that the mechanic was gachapon. And then obviously it's, you know, fit for our world already. That is a one-to-one. They didn't have to do any crazy... research and development as to if it would work, or, you know, I think they just had to get the Zonai devices, you know, the actual gachapon elements together, and yeah, you're set to go.
Yeah, and I just love that they're magnetic too, so you can attach them to anything, and, you know, just like playing, it's kind of like you're playing Tears of the Kingdom, but IRL.
You think that is fabulous. Have you seen any of these, like, in reality or just online?
I've seen them only online. Mm. Yeah, the last time I went to the Nintendo store, they didn't have those, and they only had, like, various controllers and peripherals from, you know, Nintendo's history as, like, fidget toys.
Oh, right. Yeah, I do remember that series as well, but, oh, shoot, I guess it's something to look out for next time, right?
Yeah, it, like, again, it is definitely just go to the Nintendo store for all of those reasons. You don't have to go there for just the Zono devices. It's like the whole package.
Definitely. They've got what you want. You don't even know what it is that you want, but they do have it already. So, well, today, after that big deep dive into the history and the various outlets through which the Zelda franchise has expressed itself in our world and in the digital world, we are going to visit The Legend of Zelda through the franchise's music. So our focus from here on out is going to be the music, including songs that debuted with the original game all the way through the music from the most recent release. And let me tell you, there is still plenty of to talk about. So without further ado, why don't we get into the first song on our countdown? That is going to be the theme from Gerudo Valley from Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time. So please enjoy.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That again was Gerudo Valley from, of course, the Ocarina of Time This game was released for the Nintendo 64 in 1998 and is another Zelda game that features music as a main story element. The story features a magical ocarina given to Link by Princess Zelda that has the power to do amazing things if you know the correct songs. Link travels all across Hyrule as a child and as an adult to find songs that will help him on his quest to stop Ganondorf.
Koji Kondo composed the music for the game, but got very little input as to what the team wanted. The only request he got from director Shigeru Miyamoto was to create music for dungeons that didn't have a melody, so there was nothing to latch onto while making pretty melodies for pleasant places like the market.
Gerudo Valley is the area where the music we just heard plays. It is a rocky, mountainous area that leads to the Gerudo's Fortress. The song has a Latin vibe, which happens to be one of the international types of music that Miyamoto said he likes.
Kondo spent time arranging different versions of a few songs so the flow of the music wouldn't be interrupted as the situation changed for the player. For example, in Hyrule Field, if you stop moving around, the tempo of the music will slow, and if an enemy appears, it will change to percussion. Whereas in dungeons, the music will grow louder as enemies get closer.
Yeah, that was something, as a younger person playing this game for the first time, I was like, it blew my mind that music could adapt to the situation. And maybe I didn't realize it consciously at the time, but as I got older and played again, I definitely realized it. And yeah, it's a very cool effect that they achieved.
No, I think I had that moment when I played Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie, one of those games. Yeah, like, you've got the main music, and then whenever you go into, like, a body of water, it changes to, like, a more aquatic kind of sound using, I think, like, kalimba or whatever instrument it was. Marimba.
Like a marimba. Yeah. No, that, I, actually, now that you say that, that's actually, I would second that big time. That was such a cool effect that they had with that as well.
Yeah, and speaking of, I guess, music and Gerudo Valley, like, you might notice that, yeah, like, the song being a very Latin-inspired track is a bit out of place compared to what, you know, our current understanding of the Gerudo, which is more, I don't know, it's got a more sort of like Arabian influence to it. But yeah, there is actually a video by Save Data on YouTube that kind of breaks down like the cultural influences over the Gerudo at the time and basically how Koji Kondo arrived at, you know, this iconic track.
I'll have to check that out. I'm a big fan of this track, and it's always interesting to hear how your favorite things come to be and what was going through, you know, the composer's mind at the time. So I will definitely check out. Shout out Save Data for that video.
Yeah. Speaking of which one gets more play in your rotation? The Ocarina of Time version or the Super Smash Bros. Version?
Ooh, okay. Definitely. I wanted to say immediately like, oh, definitely Ocarina of Time, but I think over time, the Super Smash Bros. Version has supplanted that. I don't know. Do you have a preferred version?
I feel like you can't really beat the classics. It's got to be the original Ocarina of Time version.
Ooh, that is fair. Yeah, I'm a sellout, I guess.
Speaking of Ocarina of Time, we did talk about Majora's Mask and speedrunning and all of that fun stuff just before, and I think now's the right time to talk about speedrunning, right?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, well, I guess a fun fact is that at this year's AGDQ event, there was a speedrun of The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Of course, randomized, I don't know if I even have the time to explain what randomized even means, but all you need to know is that this speedrun raised over $300,000 US in charitable donations. And even, like, I guess what's more mind-blowing is that this, like, specific part of the event broke the $2 million mark.
Oh, wow. Holy moly. Also, for our listeners, maybe, what is AGDQ?
Oh, yes, my bad. I forget that this isn't a speedrunning podcast. So, AGDQ is Awesome Games Done Quick, which is a yearly event where, you know, people play video games really, really quickly for charity.
It's beautiful. I think that's great. And you said this broke the 2 million mark for, like, this event as a whole?
That's right. Like, it was during this specific run that they broke 2 million.
Wow. That's so cool. I'm only peripherally related to speedrunning, as many of my friends do and enjoy it. But yeah, that's really cool to hear. I love when people are able to leverage hobbies, and not just hobbies, but, you know, things that are really passionate about like this into good deeds.
It's a massive rabbit hole, but at the same time, it is a very wholesome and engaging community out there. Yeah, if you're ever interested in speedrunning, check out ZFG. You know, he does Ocarina of Time runs pretty much exclusively. And I think, the streams are always, great to watch. I think people also fall asleep watching his streams, which I don't know. If that's your vibe, go for it.
I've watched it. Wow.
Yeah. But I guess another thing to recommend in terms of speedrunning history and Ocarina of Time is the Triforce Percent speedrun, which happened in 2022. So, yeah, through practically magic, they managed to modify, I guess, turn an unmodified copy of Ocarina of Time on the fly to include, to restore beta items and also, adding more interactions to characters and, of course, bringing back the Triforce, because, I think one thing about the Zelda series is that you can never actually, get a hold of the Triforce, but yeah, this run makes it possible.
Oh, wow. And they did that all, on the fly, like you said, on the fly. I'm assuming it might have been live or something like this, or in real time. Wow.
You basically have to experience it for, yourself. And interestingly, this is probably not a spoiler, because, let's be honest, it's very hard to spoil. This, the Triforce Percent speedrun gives Link, spoken lines, and... I think it's probably the best attempt at giving Link voice lines as we could possibly hope for.
Wow. I had no idea. I will have to check this out. I'd be interested to see. Now I'm a little bit curious. Are you, do you do speedrunning? You are very knowledgeable. I'm just a casual observer.
No, I'm just absolutely brain rotten. I think speedrunning for me is what sports is for everybody else.
Well, okay.
I don't know. There's a lot of physicality involved, and there's also a lot of precision that, it can be very taxing on you, on people in ways that you don't even realize. I think it's kind of like how chess is an exhausting sport, even though you're sitting down most of the time.
No, I just, the very little I know about speedrunning, and it should be noted, I feel that Zelda is, the Legend of Zelda as a series, and specifically Ocarina of Time, like you were mentioning, is a huge part of the community, from what I understand. It's a huge pillar of many different speedruns. But yeah, no, it is interesting how demanding it is and how frustrating it's high peaks and low lows, I feel, for people as well.
Definitely. And I think ZFG is your gateway into the speedrunning community, whether it's Zelda or anything else. It's really the best place to get started.
We will check it out while enjoying the wonderful music of various Zelda games and other video games as well.
Of course. Nerding out about speedrunning aside, let's go on to our next song, finally. So we have The Great Sea from The Wind Waker.
Thank you.
That was The Great Sea from The Wind Waker. Music is a huge part of the game, which was released in 2002 for the GameCube. In the game, Link is given a mystical baton that lets him control the wind and learn songs that unlock different areas and serve various purposes throughout the story.
The main way to travel from place to place in the game is on a boat dubbed the King of Red Lions across the Great Sea. The song of the same name plays each time you sail across the world, with a few exceptions, creating a sense of adventure and wonder each time you step off the land.
With music playing such a big part of the story, special attention was paid to the soundtrack and sound effects. Originally, the main instrument was a theremin, because Eiji Aonuma wanted the sound to be made by moving Link's body. But the instrument was too difficult to explain and handle, so he went back to the drawing board and eventually settled on a conductor's baton.
I think that is hilarious. I wish it was a theremin. That's okay, though.
I wish so, too. I might not be remembering the theremin very, like, clearly, but it had a really goofy sound, didn't it?
Yeah, it's like anytime you're watching an old-time, like, horror or sci-fi movie, it's like that really high-pitched, like, wee kind of sound.
Yep. I'm glad you described it.
Thank you. You can buy my EP coming out. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. But there are also several moments in this game where the music has interactive changes. For example, there is a boss that is basically just a floating head with two floating hands. And there are different pieces of music for whether there are one hand, two hands, or no hands at all. There are also musical sounds when you attack an enemy, and these sounds are a musical scale that matches the chord progression of whatever song is playing in the background. There are many of these musical moments throughout the game that add to this experience. That reminds me of kind of what you're describing with Skyward Sword, in a way.
Yes, absolutely. And oh my gosh, I can't believe the word just escaped my mind until now. Chord progression was what I was looking for.
There you go. Chord progression. Yes. A full circle moment on the podcast. Yeah, I think it goes without saying, but the quirk and atmosphere and everything created by the Wind Waker is truly timeless and innovative. And I feel has, you know, scratched a big itch that was in my mind, at least at the time, for something of that scale and that caliber with that style. I guess I didn't really have any sort of cultural touch point until playing the Wind Waker when I was younger that felt so unique and interesting. And I'm happy to have grown up alongside it.
Yeah, I think with Wind Waker, it really did have some absolute bangers as well. I remember the, Dragon Roost Island was a particular favorite of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I emphatically agree.
Speaking of Wind Waker, I did kind of lie a little bit about Link not being able to speak. Here, he actually does have a spoken voice line.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wait. Yeah, wait.
Yeah, he does.
Oh my gosh. I completely blocked that from my... It's not trauma, but I completely blocked that from my memory.
Well, I think it's just such a small moment that you don't notice it.
That is a good point. So we are breaking the allegations that he has not had a perfect voice line, because I feel that was perfect, because it's exactly as much as he needed.
You know what? Yeah, that is correct. Like, he only needed to say two words and he said two words.
Boom. Well, not to move us along, but I'm actually quite excited to talk about our next song. I know we're kind of sitting in the most nostalgic versions of, I shouldn't say nostalgic versions, but nostalgic eras, at least personally, of the Zelda series. But I'd love to introduce the next song, which is going to be Zelda's Lullaby. And it is going to be the version performed at the 30th anniversary concert.
Thank you.
That, again, was Zelda's Lullaby. Now, though Zelda's Lullaby has appeared in many of the games, it was originally from A Link to the Past, which was the third game in the series and the first and only title that was released on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, or SNES. It was released in 1991 in Japan and then in 1992 worldwide.
The game is called Triforce of the Gods in Japanese, but it was released when there was pushback against religious imagery in video games in America. So it was released globally as A Link to the Past to avoid controversy.
A Link to the Past was a return to the overhead view and gameplay style that was featured in the original game after the decision to make the second game, The Adventure of Link, a side-scroller caused some controversy among fans. This title was an influential part of creating the Zelda formula as it introduced things like the Master Sword and the concept of more than one world.
Zelda's Lullaby, though at the time it was called Zelda's Theme, or Zelda's Rescue, was another piece of the formula that was introduced, as it shows up in nearly every mainline Zelda game that has been released since, and even appears as a playable melody in Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess. The version that we listen to is the version from the 30th anniversary concert in 2016.
And Zelda's Lullaby has similarities to Hiroshi Sato's cover of the Beatles song, This Boy. The song was originally released in 1964, and the cover was released in 1985. The intro melody of the cover sounds very similar to the lullaby, but no connection has ever been mentioned.
You know, I've actually found that Nintendo does have a history of being influenced by popular music of the time. Oh gosh, what was it? Okay, so one of the overworld themes in Super Mario World was actually influenced by a song called Green Green.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that little bit of lore. Was Green Green? Do you remember the band who performed that?
No, it was from a very long time ago. But I know that there was a video that kind of like explained all of it. So yeah, I'm sure there's no shortage of source material there, especially in, you know, explaining the relationship between Nintendo's music and pop music of the past.
Definitely. No, that is a good point. I will also add that to the homework that I'm accumulating off of this episode. But I've never heard This Boy, nor its cover. So after we wrap up here, I'll be kind of interested to hear if I can pick out some of the sonic consistencies between the two.
Yeah, I am very, I don't know, I find it very interesting, the implications that you're basically listening to the Beatles as like part of the Zelda series.
I am trying to, it's that tracks their influences far and wide. Why not add it to the, I guess, one of the most iconic thematic elements to this video game series?
Yeah, well, that's fair. I think the Super Mario Brothers theme is based on a jazz fusion track, I want to say. I don't know. So, I don't know. It's more likely than you think.
I mean, that tracks. That completely tracks. And, you know, it just goes to show how many different artists across countries, genres, eras, and timelines have not even collaborated. That's not the right word. Put their works out into the world to inspire others to create wonderful works like this, I suppose, if we're going to spin it that way.
I mean, I would have said it's a small world, but yeah.
That's much better. It's a small world.
Yes, and speaking of inspirations, last but not least, is the main Legend of Zelda theme. This one is from the 30th anniversary concert.
Thank you.
That was The Legend of Zelda main theme from the 30th anniversary concert. So this song was actually used as the title and overworld theme for the original Legend of Zelda game for the NES.
The only note the team made for Koji Kondo was that they wanted title music. So Kondo arranged a version of classical composer Maurice Ravel's Bolero to play as the opening. But they realized that the song was still under copyright and couldn't be used without licensing.
Yep, that's, I mean, more than just inspiration. I think that's just actually using public domain music there.
Yep, that is. Japan loves to do it, but we don't need to get into that today.
Yeah. Under pressure to release the game, Koji Kondo drew on the overworld theme that he had already composed and used it to arrange the title music.
The Famicom disc system was described as having a quote-unquote new sound, but it wasn't exactly a new sound. Instead, it gave developers the ability to write their own waveforms and store them in the game's memory. The system would then reference that short waveform to create an audible sound, allowing you to get a wider variety of sounds.
Kondo used a separate program to analyze the sounds of instruments like violins and oboes, and then created a sample that sounded like the instruments. The system also allowed him to add vibrato and use it in songs like the title screen music.
I do think there's a lot to be said of the development of the creativity that is born out of either restriction or, you know, setting boundaries around something, those boundaries including technology. And I feel I've seen many a video essay or video channel covering this kind of topic, but yeah, the development of earlier video game music bound by limitations and then growing into what it is today is really fascinating. And I hope people, you know, kind of get inspired from this episode maybe to seek that out if they're interested, because there is a lot of cool things to be discovered by looking at that. And even if that inspires you to go on and make music yourself, putting yourself under certain restrictions of various technologies. But yeah, I quite like that that is tied into the history of this piece as well, this main theme that is so iconic.
I mean, if we're gonna be talking about making the most out of one thing, this song does have like so many different versions. I think, where do we even begin? There's like the Super Smash Brothers version, there's the Mario Kart 8 version. I'm pretty sure Hyrule Warriors also featured their own version of the main theme.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the overworld theme in Majora's Mask, right? How could I forget?
Of course. I'm pretty sure there is a Tokyo Ska Paradise, a ska band covered this that I remember from high school, maybe. Maybe I'm misremembering, but I'm pretty sure there's umpteen covers in every genre imaginable.
I've only heard one track that, and it stuck with me. I don't think you're wrong, but the one that I remember is the Sesame Street theme. I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they also did The Legend of Zelda.
Okay, wait, that's great. I'm gonna have to check that out, because I feel like that would be a ska version of the Sesame Street theme. It is probably exactly what I need to round up my evening tonight. But yeah, no, I think this is, I mean, it's a reason why it stuck around, and it's a reason why it resonates with the fans and even the non-fans. I'm sure this is probably recognizable on some level to many listeners across varying levels of interest and relationship to the Zelda series.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I guess I have one final question before we wrap up our hero's journey at the end of this podcast.
Well, I do have one as well, but what about
you? Okay, first? Wonderful. Okay, me first, wonderful. Okay, my question is, you got to pick one. What's the song? It could be from our list here or just throughout Zelda's history. I got to know, what's the song you always return to from the Zelda series? I know it's a big question.
That is a really big question. And oh, you are so cruel for doing this. I want to say Kakariko Village. What about you?
I would say Zora's Domain from Ocarina of Time. I think that is just the one that I am continually enamored with forever.
Great choice.
Thank you. You as well. Kakariko Village is a banger.
All right. Well, now for my question. I know that in the Animal Crossing episode, we we had a fair share of jokes. Did you have any Zelda jokes to share this time?
My gosh, as much as I felt my question put you on the spot, now I'm at a loss. While I bide time, do you have a Zelda joke to share with us?
Yes. Well, literally minutes before, recording this episode, I did have one in mind. And, of course, for listeners here who have heard the Animal Crossing episode, this might be a treat for you as well. If I had a rupee for every time I've hosted a video game-related episode with Andy, I'd have 2 rupees, which isn't much, but it's weird that it happened twice.
And I think that is the perfect closing to this episode.
Are you sure? I mean, I think I've got more. I mean...
Oh, please.
Okay, I will say overall that, I'm really glad to be hosting this episode with you. You know why?
Why is that?
Because it's dangerous to go alone.
Oh my gosh. Okay, see? You got it.
Yeah. It's going to be a challenge to try forcing so many jokes into one episode. What was that? Was that a Deku Nut? Or were you just stunned at how hilarious that joke was?
No.
I know. These jokes just keep coming back like a boomerang, you know?
Well, that was hook, shot, line, and sinker on this one, I think.
Yeah, well...
No?
I don't know. I would have to say that one bombed.
Okay. All right. Well, no. I did have a really lovely time, and I hate getting outclassed in jokes, but if I'm going to succeed to, defeat to anyone, it would definitely be to you. So thank you for schooling me right there at the end. And yeah, thanks for a wonderful episode getting to discuss Zelda.
Yes. Well, I hope you and our listeners out there will have enough fairy bottles to recover from all these bad jokes.
Before we go, just a little bit of info for our listeners as they're recovering. Look out to hear some amazing J-pop from the past couple of decades in our March Artist of the Month episode, which will feature the hugely popular singer Shizuka Kimura. Actually, Brinton, you're going to be coming back with Kuzey, and you'll be our host, so they will see you just a few days from now, bringing you that wonderful Artist of the Month episode. So please enjoy.
Oh gosh, better get my joke game up.
Shizuka Kimura does not know what's coming her way, but she will definitely appreciate it. All right, well, thank you for joining us and have a wonderful rest of your February.
Until next time, bye.
Jane. Japan Top 10.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.